I just don't want someone who I suspect to think that I suspect them, obviously, because I don't want them to kill me.
This is The Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 312 for the week of July 20th, 2020. I am punchable host David T. Cole, and I'm here with resilient flamingo Sarah D. Bunting.
But she's dead.
Homicidal handyman Tara Ariano.
Can I kill the counselor?
And lazy little camper Kate Sanchez.
I'm totally not going to be the first one to die.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great. Wow, it is a hot one. We got a camp topic, and here to join us to discuss it, it of course being the CW's Killer Camp, we have with us from the But Why Though podcast and fan network, Kate Sanchez. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Kate.
Hi. Thank y'all for having me.
Thank you for coming. So Killer Camp, imported to the CW, as so many of its shows are this summer, from the UK. Here is the premise. It's whodunit. Remember that show from ABC in 2013? It's that, but seriously. 11 contestants in the UK, from the UK, rather. They think they're there to star in a reality show called Summer Camp. Then one of them explodes. They find out the truth. It's actually Killer Camp. There's a homicidal handyman named Bruce who is being controlled by one of them, the killer mastermind, who's trying to evade discovery and win $15,000. That's the prize. If the killer goes undetected, the killer gets the money. If not, then whoever is left, they split the money, I guess.
Sorry, not to like go on a tangent. Please. Before we even get into it, but is the math of the show that each one of those competitions with the money is the ultimate prize?
I think it adds on to it, but that was not clear to me, and we can get into that later.
Because that seems like really low stakes for a reality show.
I agree.
Anyway, yes.
They compete in various challenges, some of which are to, I believe, as I have in my next point, add money to their prize kitty. And then the killer is also, it seems like, secretly maybe trying to sabotage them as well. And so it's going to be 5 episodes of pure mayhem at this classic American summer camp in Lithuania.
Yeah.
So, Kate, you chose this off our list of the week's premieres. What were you hoping for from Killer Camp, and did it deliver for you?
I mean, I was expecting mess with an homage to Slasher, so I think I got what I wanted. I am a real sucker for reality competition shows. I've seen every episode of Survivor multiple times. A much better reality competition show than this thing.
Sure.
But I did just want to see how because I'm a huge horror fan, so I wanted to see how the horror tropes would get put into a reality competition and how that would work. I actually hadn't seen Whodunit, and I did not know that that's what this pretty much was.
Okay. We'll come back to Whodunit, because I definitely have questions about that for Sarah, who may vaguely remember this, although I asked her this morning on our Slack, and she said she couldn't remember if she watched the whole thing. But anyway, did it seem to you, Kate, like the show's producers brought enough of an affinity with the horror genre to the production for you? Did you wish there was more, at least in this first episode, from what we saw?
So it was really hard because they really nailed home the tropes really hard. And it was just one of those things where I was trying to look at it from a general consumer as well. Okay, these are the things that people think slashers are most of the time versus, why are they doing this? This should be something different. This trope is kind of weird, which is what I kind of felt. So I don't think that they really brought it for me as a really big horror buff. But that said, I do think that a general audience who already is in the process of distilling slashers down into this very bare bones thing will see that and appreciate it. Whereas for me, I definitely did think they could have done more and dug a little deeper, especially when it came to how do you explain it? The relationships and how they framed everything between people. I think the mystery of the killer was something I was really, really lacking in all of it. And that's like the pivotal thing in slashers, man.
Yeah, I definitely want to come back to that. Dave had a point before we turn it over to Sarah.
Well, just talking about like a horror expert, a horror fan like Kate coming in and knowing what slasher behavior is like in the movies. Mm-hmm. I was thinking it was very weird for a TV show that was basically supposed to be like Friday the 13th, a competitive reality show about guys that run around with hooks and machetes. And that, like, that's what this is supposed to be.
Right.
That the first action of the Jason like killer is to remotely detonate a bomb using a radio detonator is very, very Jason, if you ask me. Yeah. I was like, what a weird start to the show. And like, never mind the fact that they're combating against having to film in broad daylight and having everything being very visually there. It goes against a lot of the, you know, what you would expect from a tense horror slasher flick. They don't really get into that mood until the very end of the episode when they have their version of tribal council at night.
Sort of.
Yeah. But like the conceit at the end of the episode is that one of the people that is on the chopping block kind of like literally is on the chopping block. They die in the script of the show. Right.
Yeah.
And that sort of felt the closest thing to a horror flick in the episode. But the rest of the show is like very like the challenge with the carrying juice in a watermelon and like filling it in. Like, I guess I kind of get that part of it is like the summer camp angle of it. But yeah, like they're all, I feel like they should have dropped a lot of the conceit about the fun summer campy stuff like almost right away. It just got into the tension of being a horror reality.
Yeah, make it more scary. Yeah. Okay, so Sarah, you famously are one of four people in America who watched ABC's Whodunit in 2013.
Yeah, even Mrs. Dunnett didn't make it that far.
Who we now know is Melora Hardin, the wife of the guy who played the butler. Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
To cast your mind back 7 years. We were all so much younger and more innocent then. How would you say Killer Camp stacked up to your vague memories of Whodunit?
Well, I mean, it stacks about evenly, I would say. It's really interesting to hear Kate talking about the use of the tropes, because I think for me, for this show, and I'm not that versed in horror or no more than anyone else, but I think that's like kind of the only incentive to watching the show is to see which ones they dig into and how, because as a competition, this was also the issue with Whodunit.
Whodunit was more of like an Agatha Christie type of thing.
Yes. Yeah. And they're all like in an English manor house in Vancouver. Like, what? I mean, what? And there's a butler. It's fine. But the production has zero incentive to allow actual solving on an actual organic pace to figure out who the killer is. So that knowing this and knowing that whatever the episode order is, this is how many episodes it will take, because they're not going to push Nevada the thing. Yes, I just referenced push Nevada in a discussion of Whodunit. I am so fun at parties. I will wrap this up, but there's no stakes except for the viewer to solve for the killer themselves. And even that is like, like you know, the production is going to mess with you in that regard as well. Mm-hmm. So, except for a certain like aggressive budgeness, like the prizes are like hilarious. Like, what was the name of that show from back in the day? Like $1.99 beauty contest or something like that. Like it's that, like, just make it really low. Then make it like a stamp. Mm-hmm. Here's a pen. And I also don't think I understand why you have horror tropes and camp tropes that like they don't actually overlap so far that the two aren't kind of clashing with each other is A, and B, these are not Americans, but they're all in like, you know, they're all American stereotype cast members.
Right.
So here's this, whatever, probably a club DJ who's wearing like a Letterman's jacket. Like, this is completely out of time and place. I don't understand why this is happening. and the host sucks.
It's really annoying.
What can anyone explain to me anything about hit? Like, why is this Canadian here? Like, I just don't. I am not disappointed. This is exactly what I expected, because the build of the show is designed to disappoint, because it's completely contrived and there's no genuine like solving. So unless you're sort of playing tropes bingo, which is a legit angle on it, it's exactly what you think, and it's exactly as time as much of a waste of time, I would say.
There's a lot of moments during the show where the host just seems like he just arrived on set and like he really is making it up on the spot. Like some of the comments he says after, like flop, flop, flop on the dock goes the fish with this stuff. Like it was just not there. Like say what you want about Jeff Probst as a person, but at least he knows the rhythm of the show he is on,
for sure.
He also knows the shade of the show that he's on. Like I felt like the host here was trying to do the funny shady quips at the people and it just did not land at all.
The problem with the game I felt is ultimately, other than the how cheap it is that not just the prize, but just the whole construction of it, is that what you've already said is that it has no, there's no play along value for the viewer. Like if this really were, if it were a mystery, like there would be story elements where it's like the different combinations of players would be like removed from the action for different reasons so that they could be plotting, or so that other people could be suspecting them. Or there would be like, go and try and find Bruce in the woods or whatever, like something. And that never happens. Like the closest that we get is there's one challenge where the prize is the winners each get one clue about the killer's identity, but then the viewer doesn't see what the clues are. And then the voiceover is like, and they'll probably lie to each other about what they are. So it's like, okay, well then what was this exercise for?
Right. And at the end of the day, you basically have a low rent survivor show with meaningless trappings to try to cover the wispiness of the production.
Yeah.
And that's what, that has how I felt after the first episode. Like it was just like, okay, like, I'm not going to spoil anything, but I just like, since this already aired in the UK, I'm like, well, I just want to know who the killer was ultimately. And I read the spoilers. I'm like, oh, they may have not known what they were doing either when they started this production. That's all I'm going to say.
I felt like it wanted to make you think that it's the mole. And it's not the mole.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, kind of.
The Mole was such a good show.
It was
really good. In its day.
I wonder if it holds up.
I bet it does. Because that was something where a lot of thought went into it, and it was doing what I'm describing, where it's like you're supposed to be watching for actual sabotage. And here it's just like, oh, it seemed like someone had a weird reaction. And that's like everything that everyone is hanging their hat on, which brings us to another issue, which is the contestants who actually make it to the shore, not Fergal, who blows up in the boat, are one black woman, one Asian woman, and eight white people. And then as soon as the conversation gets to who do you think it is, one person says, I think it's Eleanor, who is the black woman. And everyone else is like, oh, yeah, it's her. I think so, too. Which is partly like in a situation like this, whatever anyone says, you're going to be like, yes, as long as no one is saying me, I agree. It is other person, whoever it is. But that's not great. Like that's a bad place to start show.
It's really hard, at least for me, like the buy into reality shows is like getting to know the characters and understanding them, or like the contestants, and understanding one, the role they play in the larger set of the show, and then two, just like genuinely finding people that you like or people that you really hate. And like, truthfully, I don't think I actually learned anything about anybody, because I was just trying to figure out what tropes they were doing and where they would fit and if they were going to go deeper, that I actually just, I don't remember any names.
Yeah.
I don't have any invested interest in what happens to them. And then I think what was already mentioned is like one of the best things about mysteries or like whodunits, not even just the television show, is just like, you have to learn information with the characters as they move on, so you can one, buy into the characters, and two, buy into the mystery.
Right.
Yeah. And this doesn't, I mean, this is sort of what I was trying to say before less well than you did, is that there's no, usually with a good mystery, you have confidence that the constructor of the mystery, whether it's Agatha Christie or whodunit or whatever, you have to invest in the you have to trust in that process and invest in the idea that everyone is getting all the information at the same time, and nothing is, you're not going to get gotcha'd, mm-hmm. because then it just feels, that feels cheap too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like emotionally. And then it's like, well, why should I bother to figure this out when you're just going to try to scramble it with, I don't know, an immunity idol, right. for yeah. instance,
mm-hmm.
Probst. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, that is another issue with this, is that it's very clear that the production is willing to do whatever it has to do to drag it, to drag the mystery out, including being dishonest with the cast and the audience. So, eh.
I mean, dragging it out, even though there's only 5 episodes, like,
yeah,
that's the craziest part.
Yeah. I have an update.
Mm-hmm.
Until recently, I thought The Mole was still running in the Netherlands, oh. still running. 20 seasons of The Mole.
Good for The Mole.
Still going. And The Mole was originally a Belgian show. I did not know yeah. that.
So all right.
The more you know.
All right. Well, the whole season has already aired in the UK. It's very easy to spoil yourself, as Dave said, if you don't have the patience for even 4 more episodes of this. I already know from our work Slack, the 3 of us are done.
Yeah, I'm good.
Kate, did the pilot hook you, or are you all set with Killer Camp?
I'm going to go Google a spoiler.
Okay, so if for you, Kate, and other people listening, Google what happens the death of the second episode. I might seek out the YouTube of that, because it yeah. sounded kind of it did, great.
When we saw that, he put it in our Slack today, and it looked pretty great. Yeah.
So look
Not
forward
enough
to
yeah. want to watch it, but maybe just watch the clip.
It is time to go around the dial. Our first stop is with Tara Ariano.
So in our most recent bonus episode of Extra Extra Hot Great, which you can find on Patreon at patreon.com/extrahotgreat, I pitched a hypothetical Peacock spinoff of the NBC show Good Girls, set at a strip club. And I
did
mentioned
you sell it?
I did not. Oh. Sorry, Dave. I probably would have told you before now if I had. I mentioned the Starz show P-Valley, which at the time that we recorded our bonus episode, it had not premiered yet, but which has just aired its second episode weekend just passed. So Katori Hall adapted her play, just called Pussy Valley. The full name still appears at the end of the credits as a neon sign, but then the letters that were too hot for Starz blink out, which is cute. It's set at and around a strip club in a dying town in the Mississippi Delta, which is called Pink. Our POV character seems to be actually named Haley, but the name she uses to enter a butt dancing contest at the club in the premiere is Autumn Night, and she's also using an ID for Lakeisha Savage from a suitcase that she fished out of a flood. And we see in the latest episode that Autumn was trapped in a car during that flood and may have lost her daughter, unclear. The queen bee of the club is named Mercedes, who is getting ready to retire from stripping at the ripe old age of 25 so that she can open a dance and cheer studio for kids. She comes from the church, and she has a mother who has been very effectively guilting her into laundering what she calls Mercedes' booty money by tithing it to the church's building fund. And then there's Uncle Clifford, the owner of the club, who is a spectacular gay impresario with a lot of nails, a lot of wigs, a lot of money problems. He is $55,000 in debt, and developers are circling the property. Part of the reason he's in trouble is that he has to keep giving kickbacks to the sheriff, not to shut him down. And not introduced until the second episode, Mayor Tydell Ruffin, played by Isaiah Washington. And when I saw him, I was like, that's weird. I thought he was in Showbiz Jail. And then I couldn't remember why, other than, I mean, the Grays thing, obviously. But then he got paroled to be on the 100. And then I looked him up to do my notes today. He has a talk show now on Fox Nation. Because now he's a QAnon guy and a COVID truther.
Oh,
so
no,
he's
no,
really,
buddy.
Yeah, that's what Isaiah's Washington is up to now, guys. Yeah, Kimberly Pierce, who directed Boys Don't Cry, also directed that second episode of P-Valley. So I would really love to know how that went for the two of them, because
yeah.
I bet not great. Anyway, if you're looking for boobies, great place to go. There are lots. The show also gets very granular on how strip club economics work, including local legal vagaries. In this case, the club can't serve liquor if the girls get totally nude, which means Uncle Clifford thinks that they're missing out on having patrons throw money around willy-nilly the way they would if they were, like, drunk. And then his new friend, who's a rapper named Lil Murda, suggests that they add weed to their wings recipe to make all the guys high, and that works great. But
oh, wow.
That, yeah, which is pretty good. That stuff may be of interest to our process nerd, Sarah, but the second episode also gets into this development deal. These investors want to build a casino and resort, and there's a whole very long thing with how to structure the deal and who gets which bribes and, like, why that would make... It would all make total sense to someone who understands how, like, finance or real estate work. But it's the sort of business intrigue that when it happens on a TV show, it's like my brain turns off, like Homer with the donkey, like, dancing in a circle in his brain. Anyway, also in this episode, Uncle Clifford makes his dancers put on a sexy car wash to raise money. Like, that I understand. That's about my level. Anyway. So I'll watch at least one more and see what the balance is between, like, simple money shit and complicated money shit, but so far it's, like, interesting.
Tara went to Harvard Business School and she really knows how to put on a car wash.
Summer extension, like Sean and Felicity.
Exactly. So the other show I watched this week, which is not premiering until July 23rd, the day after this podcast drops, if you are listening to it on the day it drops, is a show coming to HBO Max called The Doghouse, another UK import, which originally aired on Channel 4. This is set at a dog rescue called Wood Green. And it's an unscripted show. They made some modifications to the rescue, like, you know, adding cameras, of course, and more staff and stuff. And they built what they call a leafy meeting pen for people to meet the dogs. But, you know, it's basically like, here are some dogs, here are some people. And so it tells the stories of how the dogs have ended up there, but also the story of how the people have ended up there looking for a dog. And as you might expect, both the dog stories and the people stories are not always happy. Some of them are just cute, happy families who come in with their kids wanting to adopt their first pet, and those are adorable. But there are also people who have had, you know, mental or physical health problems or lost a spouse or been to prison. And a lot of the dogs, you know, arrive as strays, and so they make their best guesses about what may have happened to them before they came, but some are surrendered. And the show films this process too, and you see the dog's person leave, and then the dog just sits there contentedly expecting the person to come back, and that is awful. Oh, but, but what the show then does is show that same the rescue staffer trying that dog out with a potential adopter in the same episode. Guys, it's okay. So the best parts are in, of course, the leafy meeting pen, and they put the people in there first. And so there's, like, a moment where they're, you know, sitting, waiting on the bench and, like, nervous and excited for the dog to be brought in. And every time the handler brings the dogs from the kennel, they open the door and then they cut to the person's face. And every time it's the same, like, they're so excited that this might be my dog. And, like, every time it's, like, the best dog in the world for the person. So, you know, it doesn't always work out either in the meeting pen or after a person or the family brings the dog home. But it's definitely mostly very sweet and very uplifting, and it will not make you sad. The doggies are so cute. So The Doghouse UK, it's not for Dave. He's too tenderhearted. But if you can stand a little bit of, you know, reality in your dog reality show, it's very sweet. Also, there was a Pomeranian named Bear, just like Sarah's. Huh. He's not as cute as her bear, but I sent her a picture. He's, you know, cute in his way.
I do feel like I have seen most of this show thanks to screen grabs that have been in our Slack. Thank you very much.
Yes, I reviewed it for Primetimer, but my review will not be out until the day the show drops. So instead, for my plug, I'm going to plug our friend Maureen Ryan, past and future guest of this podcast, who interviewed 30 people for Vanity Fair to report about Peter Lenkov, who was the showrunner of Magnum P.I., Hawaii Five-0, and MacGyver. I say was because CBS fired him from all of those shows for being a pure monster. And you can read Mo's article to find out why he is terrible.
All right, Kate, it's your turn. What do you have?
So I watched Cursed, And I expected a lot out of it. It is essentially a retelling of traditional Arthurian legend, but it's through the eyes of Nimue, who is a girl who will eventually end up being the Lady of the Lake. And that's kind of the premise for the show. It was really interesting because they weave in a lot of ways of like that traditional identity narrative that comes with a coming of age story, which is what this show really is trying to do. Is it's trying to have Nimue have this exploration of herself while she's also, you know, with future King Arthur and all, and you know, all the trappings of regular King Arthur legend. And it does it fairly well, but there are some things that are really, really off to me. So they did, and I'm going to kind of like, to situate myself, they did colorblind casting, which is different than casting to color, right? So casting to color is choosing a choosing an actor for a character and then adapting the character's circumstances to what that new identity brings to the character. And then colorblind casting just says, okay, this person is in there. Both good. Casting to color is better, in my opinion, because you end up with issues that often happen in fantasy, which is you have a marginalized group, in this case, the Fae, who are going through all of these bad things because the bad humans don't like them. And in Cursed, pretty much all of the humans are white that are doing all the bad things, and all of the Fae are black and brown folks, with the exception of our main character, Nimue, and like a couple of other ones. But like the ones who have like brutal on-screen deaths, they're usually black or brown. The ones who don't know how to speak English or speak very brokenly are all black, brown, or actually Asian as well, so POC characters. And it gets really frustrating to watch because that's one of my biggest issues with fantasies, is them trying to map on stories of marginalization into a fantastical world while ignoring some of the issues. And in this case, casting and having like so many, you know, POC die in as just extras. I mean, they're not really important. They don't give away the plot, but like it's frustrating, and it kind of took me out of the story when I watched it. And it's really my main critique of the show, because we actually get a black King Arthur, which is really cool. And he's such a phenomenal actor. His name's Devon Terrell. And he really steals the scenes when he's in them with Nimue, who's played by Catherine Langford. But I find myself not really being able to enjoy it because there's so much that doesn't fit, because Arthur is a thief in here. And I get what they were trying to do, but for me, like, I've seen other imaginings of King Arthur where Arthur is just not really a great guy at first, and then he becomes a great guy and that kind of stuff. But it just hits differently when it's a black actor. So if you can get past those issues, like, it is a really good show story-wise. The guy who plays Floki in Vikings is in it as Merlin, and he's phenomenal as Merlin.
Yeah, he's a weird dude. I like him.
He's so weird. I love him so much. He's really good, but it's kind of just like run of the mill, like right in the middle for me. Like, I'm probably not going to watch it again, but I do think that it deserves a second season because I think they can do more, especially because it seems like a lot of the special effects were not as detailed as I would think. Like, the costuming is really good and there's a lot of practical that is really good, but whenever they try to blend these like larger CGI special effect areas with the rest of it, it just doesn't blend well. It makes things really stand out. Like, it's clear they're in a soundstage and not a cave.
Right.
But yeah, that's kind of my take on Cursed. I mean, I can see this being a good show for a lot of people.
It's on Netflix, right?
Yes, it's on Netflix.
And is it sort of like a YA production, or is it skews older? It is. Okay, yeah. I thought it kind of sounded like that.
It has that big CW energy for the good and the bad.
And do you have anything to plug? I know you do.
Oh, yeah. So my review is up on butwhythoughpodcast.com. You can head over there and read my full detailed thoughts. And you can check out the rest of my work there as well. And you can follow me on Twitter at @OhMyMythRandier. That's where I kind of give my in real time reviews of these shows when I can. This one was embargoed like up until 2 a.m. the day it actually dropped. I didn't get to do that. But yeah, I mean, and I understand why it was, because there are a lot of the highlight of the show. Sorry to add one more thing, is that it does a lot of twists and turns that you don't necessarily expect if you're not super, super into Arthurian legend. So like if you've just watched a lot of the King Arthur, you know, the 20 character movies that have come out since 2000 or anything like that. You may miss some of the smaller things that lets these twists be really, really good. Mm-hmm. Which I think is a strength of the show. So I do recommend it. Just kind of go in knowing that it's a little weird.
And it's worth saying about your site, even though it's podcast.com, it is more of a full on
Yes. So we started as a podcast. We started as But Why Do Podcast. We've expanded into But Why Do Geek Community. And on our site, you'll find write-ups, so reviews, recaps, and features, and a lot of really great opinion pieces on different types of media, from film, TV, to video games, anime, manga, as well as a whole bunch of interviews. The most recent one was with Scott Snyder, the writer on Dark Knight Death Metal.
Sarah D. Bundy.
I forget where I posited, whether it was here or on an extra, extra hot grate, that there should be a Junior Bake Off. Well, I was right. And there already is a Junior Bake Off. And it's been going on for like five series now. Yay. So thank you to folk on Twitter and elsewhere who let me know that this existed. It is predictably adorable. Liam is indeed the perfect host for a kids version. This is like not an easy needle to thread in a competition show, particularly one that is featuring children from ages 9 to like 15. He is enthusiastic, but also gentle, and he's not condescending in either direction. Prue is his fellow judge. She is also great. They have that natural find something good to say energy that is not fake, that is critical for a kids competition to work. And predictably, like on MasterChef Junior, before it started being all kind of show busy kids with bleached teeth, the kids all support and help each other, which is also adorable. The downside is the same as on MasterChef Junior, which is that some of the interstitial stuff with the like Mel and Sue in One Guy, Harry, is like a little slapsticky and tiresome. And I know it's aimed at the kids watching, but I'm not like, I feel like I would not have responded to that as a 10-year-old. I mean, I don't really love the like quote comedic stuff on the grown-ups version either. Like just stick to things in the oven. But in any event, I'm glad I watched it. And I'm even gladder that I'm going to table continuing to watch it for now until the new programming situation gets roll dire long about like October 10th. We're going to be watching any goddamn thing. And I'm glad that I'll have that to watch. So, yes, thank you again for alerting me to Junior Bake Off. I'm glad that I have almost five whole seasons to look forward to when the dark time comes.
But sadly, you have to tell our listeners you had to fly to England to see it.
I did have to fly to England to see it, although it is possible that not that I'm advising anyone to do this, but if you do that, I'll try BritBox for a week thing on Amazon and then try 4, 6, and 3/4 days. It may be available.
Okay.
So give that a try before you start booking tickets to Merry Old England. Side note, the Cheers rewatch continueth. I'd really like to know how Diane can afford this extensive a collection of mutton sleeve blouses just in the purple and lavender family on a grad student slash waitress salary. But I guess some things are not mine to know.
I have a theory about that, Sarah, which is so many of her sweaters are hand knit. And I spent that whole time wondering who is knitting her sweaters. Is Diane knitting the sweaters? Who makes them? Because it's not her mother. So maybe mm-hmm. that's how she's saving money.
Huh. Could be.
That feels like a plot line to one of those terrible TV novels. You know,
yeah, probably.
Episode as a book thing.
Yeah, novelizations. Totally. for my plug. This week on The Blotter Presents, which is my true crime review podcast, I am super excited that I am talking with filmmaker Randy Wilkins about overlooked Spike Lee gem Summer of Sam, among other things. It was a really fun discussion. I hope you guys will check it out. It will be available as you are listening to this. That's episode 151.
All right. I got a few things, so buckle down. Finally want to talk about Doom Patrol. As we were saying earlier, we finally got the chance to watch it now that it had jumped from DC Universe to HBO Max. So we're all caught up on Doom Patrol, and I'm really enjoying this show. It's my favorite superhero thing from the past couple of years. It's hits that sweet spot for me of extremely violent, very sweary. It's sort of like Deadpool done right, but also way more cohesive. Mm-hmm. It actually has like nonsensical and violentness of a Deadpool show or movie, but also manages to be cohesive and have a storyline as well. So it manages to do both things. You know? So it's a collection of weird superheroes. You have Cliff, who was a race car driver, and they don't actually mention any of the characters' names, so these are all character names from the comics. I don't think they've actually named them in the show yet, but right. He's Robot Man,
right?
And Crazy Jane, who's Jane, obviously. Larry Trainer, who's Negative Man. The Chief, Niles. And then the villains, Mr. Nobody in the first season, played by Alan Tudyk.
Mm-hmm. You forgot.
Oh, yeah.
Rita.
Rita, yes. Rita, who is Elastigirl, which is that also the name from The Incredibles? Is she Elastigirl or Elastic Girl?
I don't remember.
Yeah, maybe that's why they haven't mentioned her name yet. But yeah, she gets stressed and then turns into goo. That's her superpower. So they're all sort of under the wing of the Chief. But as we get through the series, we understand the Chief has very particular motivations for why he's, quote, helping them. But there are some things in Doom Patrol that I definitely haven't seen on TV. One is like super violent, and we've seen super violent stuff, but the fact that this is like a DC property and there is so much fucking swearing in this movie, in this series.
It's extremely not for kids.
Extremely, like absolutely 0% for kids, which is why I suppose I'm reacting to it, because I feel like I don't react very well to the CW energy DC stuff. Like once in a while I'll watch it, like that was cute, but I'm never gonna watch
Stargirl
or Arrow or Flash like beyond what I, you know, whenever they kind of come across my path. But this show I would seek out. It's interesting, like the way the DC model, I think mostly by mistake, has settled into this thing where they get to do a version of their universe for this audience and this audience, right? You know, they have their failed version of the Marvel movie universe, but then like they have their CW universe, and that's been a success for them. I don't particularly go for it, but right.
It's not for you.
Yeah. But it's been like done well. They've created their own, you know, crossovers and tie-ins, and there's like 15,000 of those
shows.
There's
so many of them. Yeah.
So you know that's been said. And then I feel like this is like the third arm with Harley Quinn, the animated show, where they're just like, this is our grown-up TV one, right? Or not grown-up, but not particularly mature, but it's definitely for adults, right? Doom Patrol feels to me like if The Tick wanted to have a throughput, right? It is very much like, what weird characters can we dream up next and put them in situations, and they keep going on that. Like one of the best episodes, the most surprising and delightful things for me in the first season was Danny the Street.
Yeah.
Who is a genderqueer sentient street that sort of takes marginalized people under its wing and protects them by transporting across
under their wing.
Yes. Thank you. And sort of protects them from this organization that is like the Bureau of
Normalcy.
Thank you. Wait, what? Like, I was just like, what? Wow, that's really awesome. And then it comes back, and like Danny comes back, and they are in like season two, where they transform into a race car tire for reasons I suppose we'll figure out later. It's just like, I haven't seen a show with this alchemy.
It just feels very comic booky in a way of like, what if we did this? There's no reason not to.
It feels comic booky, but it feels 2020 to me too,
yeah,
right? Like
yes.
It doesn't feel like I enjoyed The Tick and the various incarnations of it, but it's just a jumble of things. This is one of those cue card shows. Throw a bunch of cue cards of ideas on the floor, pick a few, And there's your episode, right?
Yeah.
It's but this one, like, it actually has a plot and they have backstories constructed for all these characters, of which many elements we're still discovering, and they tie back into things that happened in season one.
Yeah.
So it's all planned, like, yes, like a comic book run.
Yes.
Which is nice when they do it right.
Right. And all of these characters are like actively dealing with trauma, mm-hmm, in a way that the show takes seriously, but does not, it still manages to not feel ponderous.
There's Larry Trainer. He's like, he is 80, but he's 30.
Yeah.
You know, and there's, and his family is all like older than him now, and he has to go like deal with that. And
he's voiced by Matt Bomer, and yeah, usually he is all wrapped up in bandages, but we get a lot of flashbacks of him, so we do get to see his
pretty face.
Yeah.
So yeah, I really recommend it a lot. I really am enjoying it. Season two is darker than season one, not quite as fun, but still fun.
Yeah.
Like they don't abandon the weirdness and the oddness of everything for season two, but it's definitely got a darker edge to it.
I'm not as wild about the daughter character, but I assume that she's going to lock in at some point.
Right. Right. But yeah, no, it's weirdness and it's like willingness to go over top weird just works in an unexpected organic way for me. So I really enjoy that. And the other show we're watching is the Harley Quinn animated show, which, is also very sweary, as also extremely violent,
also has Alan Tudyk.
Oh yeah. Right. Also feels of 2020, like one of the supervillains named, Psycho gets kicked out of the Legion of Doom for calling Wonder Woman a cunt, and there's this whole thing like they're like, whoa, that's way too toxic even for us. Wow. Like that's the storyline in Harley Quinn,
and he's voiced by Tony Hale, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh my god,
their Lex Luthor is voiced by Giancarlo Esposito. He's amazing.
It's really well cast, it's really well paced, there is an ongoing story for that one too, and it is just like it's funny. It's generally
funny. Really funny.
The lead character Harley Quinn is okay. Poison Ivy, my favorite character, is definitely Bane.
Bane is the best. He's voiced by James Adomian.
Because Bane in this is basically everybody's impression of the movie Bane.
Yes.
And they got James Adomian to do it, who's the perfect choice. He's the guy who does like Jesse Ventura and all those like deep voice characters from Comedy Bang. And he's just perfect here. He's sort of like, he's this big, if you don't know who Bane is, he's just like, well, if you've seen the movie, you know him. But like in the comic book, he's super top heavy, always doing his arms on gym day kind of guy. Got the mask. He's got the super serum that makes him even bigger and all that sort of stuff. But he's got like self-esteem issues when it comes to his place in the Legion of Doom.
He's trying to make people like help him do his card tricks and stuff. He's like really insecure.
Yeah. Like you often feel like you want more of a character, but then like if you do it, you're like, oh, actually that was the perfect amount. I'm kind of like there with Bane.
Yes.
So yeah, so I'm surprised that DC's like found, I think, where they're going to be most successful, and I think it is like these streaming projects, that it's not going to be the big projects on the movie screen if we ever get back
there. I don't know how you can say that when I just watched Joker yesterday and it changed my life.
So thumbs up for those two. Did you watch any of those, Kate? I know you're into it.
Yeah, I have not. I watched the first half of Doom Patrol season one. I haven't watched the rest of it or season two, and I haven't watched Harley Quinn, although I hear nothing but good things and it gets recommended to me all the time.
Yeah,
check it out.
Yeah. All right, so this week on the Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show, it was the start of our first competitive season.
Woo!
It all starts with a game called Guest and Show, where we talk about unexpected cameos and stuff like that, and then we slide into in-universe advertisements. You have to identify what property is from. I won't give you the answer, but see if you know what this is from.
You take a hot dog, stuff it with some jack cheese, fold it in a pizza. You got cheesy blasters.
So if you want like another 20 minutes of that, I've got the podcast for you. The Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show, created by me, Dan Cassino, and Taylor Cole.
No relation.
Next on Extra Extra Hot Great, it's Weird TV Habits, starring, I'm going to guess, Tara.
The weirdest.
Also, me and Sarah will be in the room while it's recorded.
Being horrified, yes, as I go into extreme detail of stuff you don't even know how weird I am.
You got your process.
Uh-huh.
Like years ago, you used to do all this with like a nerd book.
Nerd book is in my notes. The notes are prepared. I did this last week.
All right. I don't know if Sarah can have the same amount.
Oh, God,
she
no.
may have.
No person does.
I watch TV like a regular person.
Yes.
Through Tara, who tells me what to watch. That is available to all supporters at any level at patreon.com/extrahotgray. And while we're there, I just want to say thank you to all our Patreon supporters.
Yes.
If you listen to us, you'll notice we haven't done an ad read in months and months and months. That's because the ad market is now basically zero for podcasts, unless you happen to be like Joe Rogan or somebody like that.
Or Conan O'Brien.
We are leaning on Patreon more than ever to keep the lights on here. And so we thank you. If you feel like you want to donate $1 a month, I think that's the minimum at Patreon, and that's fine. $1 opens up all the archives. We got over 70 episodes, ranging anything from 10 minutes to like half an hour. So if you want a little more extra hot great in your life, think about supporting us on patreon.com/extrahotgreat.
And for our next main episode,
we've got Joshua Rivera joining us on the next EHG Prime to talk about Lost Resort, which is not Last Resort.
No.
The nuclear submarine meets Lost drama.
Thank God.
Sarah says, thank God. Dave's like, no, the reboot. It's time.
If there was one show that had an extended scene about negotiations on the price of fruit while the world might be ending, if you can name a better show that fits that category than Last Resort, I will give you $100, because frankly, it doesn't exist. That
anyway.
Is next week on EHG. That music means it's time for the canon. Our guest, Kate, is submitting this week. Take it away, Kate.
I am submitting season one, episode nine of Given. It's called A Winter Story. And the reason I am submitting this is because Given is a anime based on a yaoi manga. If you're not familiar with weebiness and anime and manga, yaoi is also more affectionately known as boys love in the community. So you're seeing same-sex relationships between two men. But because of that, especially here in the U.S., those stories often get written off as usually being explicit. And Given is one of the beautiful examples of how we see storytelling in anime go past one, just regular romance storytelling tropes, as well as heterosexual romances. And ultimately, this episode gives an amazing detail of grief, because when we hear our main character sing for the first time the song he's been writing about for the past 9 episodes, you finally get to see all the pieces fall into place. All the times he was quiet, all the times he acted weirdly, and you finally realize that this is really just a story about grief, more so than it's a story about any romance. And that's what I think it deserves to be in canon, because it does so much for anime as a style of animation and storytelling, and it does so much for the subgenre of yaoi. The story Given is a story about a guy named Mafuyu, and he is experienced the loss of his best friend at the beginning. That's who you believe it is, just a best friend. He actually ended up finding him. His friend had committed suicide, and he ends up getting his guitar. That guitar serves as kind of his last remaining connection to him. And it's what brings him to join a band. And that band gets together. They start practicing to perform at a competition. And he slowly ends up developing feelings for Retsuka, which is another boy in the band. They're both in high school. And through this process, you get to understand that really his best friend, and who the series had painted as his best friend, was actually his very first boyfriend, his very first love. And what episode 9 does is it takes all of that emotion that's been built up but never really discussed from Mufuyu as a character, because as a character, Mufuyu doesn't know how to express emotion to anybody. He doesn't necessarily know how to grieve. He just feels things. And when he feels things, he's silent and he stares. And it's this really great crux of where you get to understand how a character who has been silent for a long time, which has kind of given way to some comedy, some regular rom-com hijinks between him and his love interest. When we get to episode 9, which is they're in the middle of their competition, everybody at this point doesn't even think Mifuyi is going to sing. They're just going to play the chords. They're just going to do the music. They're the instrumental. They're not going to do any of the vocals. And then all of a sudden, as soon as they start playing, Mifuyi starts singing. And when he starts singing, it's this really beautiful song that is detailing, and it helps when you have the lyrics in English, but it's detailing his process of understanding that his ex is going to be there no matter where he goes, and that's okay. Because at the same time, like, even when he moves away from it, when he leaves it, when he's not going to forget. He's always going to be there, and he's going to keep seeing him and everything, but it's going to be okay to move on. And then that also leads to us getting our kiss between our two characters that everybody has been shipping, which is Mifuyu and Retsuko in the story. So it's really touching, and there's a lot going on in the episode that is done with just that song, because it really puts together all of the pieces. Actually, the first time I watched Given, it was at a community watch night where we watched all 11 episodes at one time, and we were all in our, oh my God, just let them kiss already. What is happening? Oh, this is funny. And then all of a sudden, episode 9 hit, and we were all just crying with each other in the voice chat. And it was this really well done episode that showed that it was a story that was so much bigger than this really simple, you know, high school romance.
That's great. I love it. So I'll go first. Love that I knew nothing about the story going into it. We just start in media res. We're at the competition, as Kate said, and Mifuyu's guitar string has broken. And Retsuko just seems like he's sort of freaking out. We don't know anything about this. And because all I know about this is that it's an anime, I'm like, is it a magic guitar string? Like, I have no idea.
Why is this a big deal?
then I figured it out. So, you know, when we get a canon presentation like this for a show that we don't watch, you never know if we're going to, you know, if the episode that's chosen, if we're going to be able to understand, like, from this episode, even if it's very pivotal, like where we are in the story and why this is a big deal. But this is so obvious. I mean, in a good way, like, it's so clear what a payoff this is, both for Mifuyu to take the mic and start singing, like the reaction of the crowd and how in the reaction of his bandmates, what a big deal this is. And then to see, you know, as he's singing, the montage of, you know, his memories of the story of his boyfriend who died. And then, you know, when he runs off stage and Retsuko follows him, and then it's clear, like, this is what everyone's been yearning for, this kiss, yes. Like what the payoff the kiss is. It's just like, oh, okay, I totally get it. And so, you know, even not having watched the previous 8 episodes, clearly this is a huge, huge turning point. So, like, I get it.
Yeah, we've been talking for whatever reason, the idea of having a show where there's a lot of yearning has come up recently.
Well, we were talking about Little Voice last week.
Something else too. And here's the third in our pattern.
Yes, a lot of yearning. Yeah. Yearning here too with a payoff. So yeah, this was definitely a great introduction to a genre I did not know existed. I can understand why it has its fans, because this was very emotional. It was really gripping. Mm-hmm. And the coda after the credits, I mean, the credits themselves at the end with the adorable dog chasing the butterfly, it's like, come on.
Good episode that for is Pomeranian.
Yep.
Thank you. I looked and I was like, outraged that we hadn't seen it yet until the credits. And I was like, there's a teenage Pomeranian. We didn't get to see it. Damn you, Given. And then there he was with his little X for a little butthole while he's looking at the sky. So cute.
Yeah, this was great to watch. Thank you for bringing it to our attention and for opening a whole new avenue of thrilling teenage love to me personally. Sarah, why don't you go next?
This, like, at first I was like, oh my God, with the emo feels, like, it's a guitar string, like, everybody calm down. So I just, like, paused it and did a little Googling to see what was going on. And I was like, all right, well, this level of melodrama does seem earned based on events prior to where I came in. Also, everyone just has such wonderfully animated emo hair, like everything's so perfect in that regard. But this episode, like, there is something a little bit almost freeing about, first of all, not knowing any, like having never watched the show before. And then a lot of the work is done with the song, but then the subtitles have this folktale earnestness also that sort of is freeing for the viewer to just like feel what's happening instead of intellectualizing it. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, I had just read this interview on AV Club with Amanda Peet about her performance as Betty Broderick in Dirty John, and she is amazing in that. But she had this line that I wrote down, which is that mental illness is not a playable action, meaning that like whatever your dialogue is and wherever this character is, you have to like find a relatable thing to be doing, because like mental illness is not a playable action. It's not a motivation. And I found myself thinking about that as there are these like flashbacks, or this kind of, it's like the scene in Contact kind of when she's on the beach with David Morse, like, and Yuki is sort of like this version of his, depression feels like actual, depression versus the TV version, which is very like stylized so that it can be performed.
Yeah. And it's melancholy.
Yes. Yeah. Or that it's like, well, you know, tell the actor not to wash their hair for 6 to 8 days, which is like, it doesn't always look like that, which is why we as a society have such difficulty to like battling it anyway. And then that last scene on the beach, the way they're talking about it, like, yeah, you'll remember this in 2 years or 5 years, but 10 years, forget it. And then they're just talking about how they'll start to forget little by little, and the cumulative power of the episode up to that point. And also it just being 2020, and every now and then you're just like listening to a song that you've heard a million times and you're like, this like really just got to me, like that we're letting go of things all the time. And I was like, I don't know if this is the point of this canon presentation. I don't know if I'm sort of like coming into this via the right door, but I don't care. It really was very effective and beautiful, but not like sticky about it. So yeah, I really enjoyed this, and particularly once the Pomeranian quota had been met, I was very pleased to be introduced to this, and just generally because it's something so different from what we usually talk about. So yep. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Another thing to add to Sarah's canon credentials, the PQ.
Yes, the PQ. Did I want to watch another one? Yes, I did. Was it because of a fluffy animated dog? Possibly.
Anime, I was like 10 years too old to get into anime. Anime hit stateside about 10 years after I stopped watching cartoons. So I was too cool now that I was a teenager or whatever, right? So like anime had just like barely started to penetrate the market when I was 8 or 9, like Star Blazers hit, which is Battleship Yamato in Japan. Like that was it. Like you could watch that, maybe Battle of the Stars, and that was it. Maybe Astro Boy. And then it goes fallow for a while. And then in the 90s, boom, right? And then now it's everywhere. So much like with comic books, where I kind of know the big players, right? I know the big pieces. Like I'm not really into the minutiae of comic books, but I loved Watchmen. I love Sandman. I've loved lots of graphic novels that people have suggested to me, but I'm not going into the tertiary this and that's in the, you know, here's this little independent label from Portland that you really got to check out. They did the story. I'm like, that's not where It's not how deep into the field I go, right? And anime is the same way. Like I've seen the big ones, I've seen that, but I haven't really like gone into like anime series. Certainly, I don't have a Crunchyroll account, right? So when this was sent, I was like, okay, I know absolutely zero about this. And we started watching it, and I was like, much like Tara and Sarah, I'm like, I don't know why is everybody freaking out about this guitar string? And again, we did the same thing as Sarah. It's like I had to go and just Google it, just get caught up, which wasn't hard. It was just like a couple sentences. But then I was like, oh, okay, like this is sort of like when, you know, as a kid, comic books were like Thor and Captain America and explosions and violence and all that good stuff you love. But then like years later, you read Sandman, which was like totally different. You know, it is much more like a piece of literature and blah, blah, blah. This is sort of the same way. Like, oh, there's no Given is missing the battleship with the Death Star cannon in the front. But it's also excellent because this is a totally different thing I have not been exposed to in the past. And that's how I kind of felt about this. Like, I love it when I discover something that's really good and something totally new to me. And this was another project like that. And it doesn't happen that often. But when it does, it's really great. I do have a question, though, Kate, about the translations on this sort of stuff. Yeah. So are those first party translations that we're reading?
So it depends. I don't have an answer because I don't know how it worked for this one.
OK.
A lot of the times you'll get different translations that are done for specifically dubbing, and then you get another translation that's done for sub work. Okay. So a lot of the times the two don't really match up all the time. And there's small variances, and a lot of it has to do with the intensity usually behind them.
Right.
This one, I don't have the answer, unfortunately.
As it was happening, I was like reading it and I kind of felt like I understood exactly what they were going for, but the wording some points, and maybe like, I know Sarah said it was very sort of like the language of it kind of led her just enjoy it on that fairy tale level. To me, I was sort of like almost like rewriting a word here and there as I read it, because I felt like the intention of what the subtitle said and what I thought was going on the screen was slightly different, slightly more poetic in my mind. And I felt like I was rewriting some of the text. And I was just kind of wondering if that was, because I know when I got into, I know this is like from an official source, but let's just pretend that I once upon a time pirated the Bridge series.
Same with fandubs.
And I got into fandubs because it was not yet on the BBC. And I was so desperate to watch season two and season three of it that I downloaded a sidecar file that you put onto your video that is the closed captioning. So you can now read subtext. And these are just done by fans, and they just do it, and they time code it all, and they put it in there. And they weren't often great. And you understood what the dialogue was in theory and generally what they were saying, but they often didn't quite hit the mark. And I didn't feel like it was bad in this or anything like that, but I felt like I was charitably rewriting things here and there. So I think that might be like my one caveat is that, you know, just because it was written in a different language and is being translated en masse with many, many other things, I am sure, in a production line of translation, I feel like may have lost some of its poetic license or something like that along the way.
Yeah, so I've read the official English translation from Viz. So it's also a manga, and I own the manga because I had to after I watched this. it is slightly different in the official translation. In official translation in manga form, because there's always changes in subtitling when we move to anime. But I would say probably one of the biggest things, I don't think you're wrong, but I think it also has to do with the fact that there are words in Japanese that don't necessarily translate to English. And then I think it's also because in a song, and especially in lyrics, you're trying to translate specifically for meaning. And because it's from another culture, some of those things don't necessarily hit. You see it happen a whole bunch whenever there's any sort of song or poetry or something presented in an anime, because they have to find analogous things in, like, the localization team has to work real hard to make sure that that Americans are, you know, whatever, whoever is going to be taking care of it understands it. So I don't think you're wrong.
Yeah. And you're dealing with things like Japanese idioms I would know nothing about. And that part is definitely part of the translation. I'm just feeling like you have to do a little work as a viewer to sort of put your brain, like, you're reading one thing, but you're also reading intent a little bit and tweaking it in real time a little bit, I thought, which was interesting. Yeah.
Well, it's like, that movie with, maybe Vincent Castle, called La Haine, where his gang name was Asterix, but then they translated it as Snoopy in the subtitles. It's like, that's not, I mean, I see what you're doing, but this would not, no, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I mean, I don't know. I sort of liked having that distance from it a little bit because it was so intense emotionally.
I didn't find it distracting. I just felt like that was a involuntary process that was happening in my brain as I read them.
Right. Yeah. Sure.
And it wasn't destructive or anything like that. I feel like I got it out of the text, but I also, my brain was like, here's some supplementary reading for you. Yeah, speaking about Japanese words that have no counterparts in the US, this is totally nothing to do with the show. And I don't remember the actual word for it, but there is a word in Japanese for eating until you're only 80% full. And it stuck with me. I read it like 20 years ago and it stuck with me ever since as like a sort of a foundation of healthy eating in Japan is this word about only eating till you're 80% full. Good advice. All right, let's put this to the official vote. Tara Ariano.
Vote yay. Thank you, Kate.
Sarah D. Bunting.
And I feel like I've learned so much. That's a yes for me.
Yeah, and to me too. Learned a lot about the show, but also I feel like I got a little anime education too, which I'm totally down for.
Yeah.
That means that given season 1, episode 9, A Winter Story, you are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for our winner and loser of the week. Who has the winner?
I have the winner. Crime documentary fans. Are there too many of these right now? As someone who runs a true crime review podcast, yes, there are. But here are two that have been in the news recently that I'm looking forward to. The first one is the 1986 New York Metropolitan Baseball Club is getting a multi-part 30 for 30 series. I think it's probably just two nights like the Mark McGwire thing was. These were not good guys. Like, the book about them was called The Bad Guys Won. They were like a, you know, one team hashtag Me Too juggernaut, unfortunately. So that's going to be fascinating. The other one is that The Godfather of Harlem is inspiring a docuseries spinoff also at its home network of Epix, which I know that everyone's like, Epix, what's it, you know, what's an Epix? It just had a, or actually this coming week, it is dropping its Helter Skelter miniseries at last. And that is not perfect, but it's quite good. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with Godfather of Harlem. And Forrest Whitaker is involved with the docuseries as well.
Speaking of epics, we should say as part of your good things that DC did, Pennyworth.
Oh, shit.
Season 2, Pennyworth is coming out soon.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, I think they made it.
Speaking about sweary, violent DC things.
Yeah.
Oh, Pennyworth's so good.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's definitely the weirdest of all those shows. Like, it's crazy to say that Pennyworth is weirder than the show with the race car driver's brain living in a robot body, but it is.
Kind of. They're weird in different ways, but I find Pennyworth puts me off balance more than Doom Patrol does. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, loser of the week, Jeremy Roenick. He is a hockey commentator at NBC who got fired in February after making sexually suggestive remarks about some of his colleagues on a podcast, and has decided the way to respond is to file a lawsuit against the network in New York Supreme Court. This is all per TV Line, claiming wrongful termination on the grounds of anti-straight discrimination. Just not a thing.
No.
In this society. It's not how minority rights work.
Was there information on, like, do they have a summary of their case that they file or something like that?
Well,
where they actually kind of just explain it?
Yes. His lawsuit, I'm going to read from the TV Line report. He states that figure skating commentator Johnny Weir made, quote, colorful commentary, end quote, about skaters' body parts for NBC Sports during the 2018 Winter Olympics. And when Roenick asked his supervisor about that, the supervisor responded, according to Roenick, that Weir is gay and can say whatever, which I doubt that the supervisor said that, but that's what Roenick says they
don't,
said.
Don't come for my man, Johnny Weir, under any circumstances. I'm sorry. Yeah, like, but at first I was eye rolling this. Now I fucking hate this guy.
Right. But like, it, there's no context here of like whether he was saying like, look at this skater's thighs that gives them the power to X, Y, Z. Like, you know, there are contexts to say that versus going on a podcast and saying my colleagues, whatever he said, that's not reported here. Anyway, this guy's a pig. Fuck this guy. He's not going to win this case. I'm going to go ahead and guess. And Dave has a sub loser.
Well, before I get into that, let me just say American hockey commentators. I'm not a sports guy, but even when I watched American hockey coverage for the first time, like, wow, color commentary is terrible.
Right.
It's just like it lacks the edge. I mean, I imagine Canadians doing football or Canadians doing baseball is probably the inverse of that.
Sure.
Where they're just, they didn't grow up with it in the same way. So they don't get, it's not quite as dynamic, but.
Right.
Anyways, sub loser of the week. And I don't really have a dog in this fight. I don't really care too much, but a lot of people do. And that is the Muppets have a new show coming up on Disney Plus, Muppets Now. And they put out a fucking COVID-19-esque trailer where they're all on their version of Zoom.
Well, I can tell you because I watched a little bit of the screeners this weekend. That's part of the show. That's not just a trailer. That's they've introduced it as an element of the show as well.
Frankly, at this point, I want a COVID-19 show that promotes the fact that they don't do that. I had a
also they're Muppets, like they don't have to worry.
I think it was Spy back in the day when the OJ trial was going on that they had a corner exclamation that said 100% OJ free.
Yes.
I feel like that is like Zoom conference scene free.
Yeah.
Anyways,
anyway.
People are angry because they have a new guy voicing them, Kermit, because the old guy was fired because he was a diva or something like that.
Yeah.
And he does sound, he sounds markedly different than Jim Henson in this past. The past guy did a pretty good Jim Henson impression. This guy's doing something.
Well, we also had like 20 years to get used to this version of Kermit.
So let me play that.
Hey everyone! Hey, thanks for hopping on at such short notice. As you all know, we had our big meeting with Disney Plus, and I'm happy to report that Muppets Now received a green light!
Very nasally Kermit.
Is that Colin Hanks?
No. Like, it's just some guy.
No.
So, I mean, I get it, but also, who cares?
Adam Grossworth does. Adam Adam.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Adam, man. We should have had you on for this segment so you could do your 20-minute screed, but I hope that won't keep you from enjoying Muppets Now, Adam. Speaking about not enjoying things, you know what time it is?
Game time.
It's game time. All right, everybody, this is the 11th, holy cow, game time of the season. Our season scores are Sarah with 4 points, Tara with 4 points, and Value Guess with 2 points. And as you know, 5 points wins the season. So we've got a 66% chance the season will end today. And today we are playing Adverse Conditions from our good friend from France, Caroline, who earns herself a supernatural or psych extra credit topic of her choosing, I assume. In Adverse Conditions, I will read you up to 4 clues about a character who has gone through some shit. You can guess who it is after each clue, but the more clues you use, the less points you will get. 4 points for the first clue. 1 point for the fourth clue. That works that way, right? We've got 24 questions. We got 1 score break with an Adam Grossworth equalizer challenge zone. Tara, steel meal situation, please.
Thank you, Dave. Sarah DeBunting, I regret to say, has 0 steel meals. I have 1 steel meal and an extravaganza gong. Mm. Valued Guest has 2 steel meals. So how this works, Kate, is if someone is about to get dinged out, you can swoop in and say steel meal before Dave gives the correct answer and steal their point or points.
Okay.
But by the nature of this game, that's only going to happen on the very last clue of them because they get up to 4 clues before they get buzzed out. So just
so we can, you said we can guess at each level.
You can guess four times.
Got
yes.
Got it. Okay.
All right. So that is how it is played. Are we ready to play Adverse Conditions? No, we're not, because we got to throw it to Piggy to see who's going first. Good save, Dave.
We will start with valued guests.
All right, okay. Kate's going to go first, followed by Tara, then Sarah. Are we ready now to play Adverse Conditions? You know what the adverse conditions were? My
confusion.
Soundboard.
Okay.
Here we go, Kate. I'm going to start giving you clues. You can guess after each clue. It will become clearer as you get more clues, but no penalty for guessing at each. Your first character, you need to name the character, was wounded during a war. And you can guess, or you can just ask for the next clue if you're never going to get it.
That's next clue.
Gets married, but soon becomes a widower. Was wounded during a war and gets married, but soon becomes a widower.
Next clue.
A deranged mastermind uses him as a hostage and puts a bomb on him.
Is it Bucky Barnes? No, it can't be Bucky Barnes. He didn't get married.
He's also not on TV yet.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Last clue. Saw his best friend jump to his death, or so he thought.
John Watson.
Nice.
Correct. John Watson from the show Sherlock. That is good for 1 point. You're on the board.
Oh, Tara. Dear.
Yes, sir.
Resisted being tortured by the Chinese for 2 years.
Sidney Bristow? Okay.
That's what I would have guessed.
Lost his best friend and a coworker to a car bomb.
Jack Bauer?
Yeah!
Correct. That is worth 3 points. 3 points. Sarah D. Bunting, are you ready for your first character who went through some shit?
I feel like no, but let's proceed.
Okay. Now keep in mind, went through this shit is a relative term.
This is the shit that Sarah's going through this game.
Lived most of his adult life with his mother. They shared a bed until he decided to have his own room and only slept in the same bed as his mother when either of them had a bad dream.
Principal Skinner.
I like that guess. Here's your next clue. He's an attorney, but a really bad one, who took the bar in Alaska because over there are only 10 laws.
I thought I had a guess, but I'm wrong.
Lionel Hutz?
Next clue. He is a constant punching bag for his superior who makes his life miserable.
Cliff Clavin?
Here's your last clue. His only escape mechanism is his love for music, but even his a cappella group is the Worthless Peons. I think this is a blind spot for you,
Benson,
Sarah.
Someone steel mail it.
I have to know the name of the person, right? I know who he is. I don't know his name.
Tara knows, and we lost the actor recently.
Yeah.
Do you remember the character?
I can't remember
the
characters. Is it Ted?
Ted.
Ted?
Tech.
From Scrubs, right?
Yeah. Ted Buckland.
Oh, right.
Okay. Never going to get that.
From the bed clue, I thought it was Cliff. And then they said the lawyer.
Yeah.
All right, we're back to Kate. Drowns, but is revived.
Meredith Grey?
4 points.
Oh, wow.
Last clue was inserting her hand on a bomb to stop it from triggering.
A classic.
Yeah.
All right, Tara.
Yes.
As a child, built a hugging machine to compensate for the lack of affection displayed by his cold mother.
Oh, Sheldon. Damn it!
Was the subject of one of his mother's psychology books, which included embarrassing data on his bedwetting.
The other one, whose name is...
I'll accept first or last name on this one.
The guy he's played by Johnny Galecki. Oh, no. God, no one ever talks about him.
He's been, well, if it is his first
I
name
know
you're thinking
who it
of,
is too.
They've been an answer.
Why don't I have steel
on
meals?
Two questions. So it's not like nobody ever talks.
Man, no, I know.
Do you want more clues? Or
it won't help.
Won't help?
No. Does any, but.
Can I steal meal?
Well,
sure,
you could
steal meal at this level. Go for it.
Tara's very generous.
I don't know.
All right. Okay.
Leonard
Hofstadter. All right. So Tara gave up after two. So I guess you just stole 3 points.
Yeah.
In something I didn't think was technically possible in this game.
Well,
there we go. It's our gift to you.
I was like, Sarah. I was stuck on miles and I knew that wasn't right.
All right, Sarah, here's your second. Was tricked into eating a so-called vegetarian pate, which truly contained goose.
Angel.
Her sister used her name to star in porn films.
Phoebe Buffay?
3 points. Nicely done. Back to Kate. As a young girl, witnessed the affair of her mother with her best friend Mina's father.
Oh dear. Next clue.
Was possessed by a demon which eventually led to her mother's death.
Oh my god. Next clue.
She's got a lot going on. It turns out she's a god-fearing witch.
Oh, Tara. No?
Nope. Last clue coming at you. She hitched up with Dracula, but that didn't work out, so she sacrificed herself to save London and probably the world.
Oh my god. I don't know the name, but I feel dumb. It's a show on Kate. Sci-fi.
No, it's not on sci-fi. This is Penny Dreadful.
Yeah.
Oh.
I couldn't remember her name either.
Vanessa.
Vanessa.
Vanessa Ives. All right, Tara.
Yeah.
Writes a first book that isn't the success she had expected.
Jane Villanueva.
What the hell? Wow. 4 points. Sarah. Lost both his parents in the course of the series.
Lost both his parents in the course of the series. Kojak.
Second clue. Made a serious error in diagnosis that led to the death of a woman during childbirth.
Oh, Mark Green.
Final clue. Died of brain cancer.
Bald and unloved.
Back to Kate.
By facts.
Oh, God.
Suffers from sleep paralysis.
Next clue.
Saw her husband die and was incapable of helping him due to said sleep paralysis.
Next clue.
Suffers from the symptoms of withdrawal from drug addiction when her twin brother goes into rehab.
Oh. Next clue.
Final clue. She and her twin brother saw ghosts and apparitions as children. This led her to eventual suicide.
I got nothing.
Anybody? This is from The Haunting of Hill House. It is Nell Frain.
Oh,
yeah, okay.
I forgot they were twins.
Back to Tar.
Yeah.
Struggles to stand out in her family is overshadowed by her beautiful and charismatic older sister.
Jan Brady?
I like that guess.
Gotta do it.
Was left at the altar.
Oh, has a sister and was left at the altar. Who was left at the altar? No, keep going.
Gets pregnant by a married man who mysteriously disappears in his endeavor to get a divorce.
Oh, poor Edith. It's Edith Crawley.
Correct. Edith Crawley from Downton Abbey. That's good for 2 points. Sarah D. Bunting. At a low point in his life, he once cried while dressed as Batman.
He once cried. I mean, who amongst us? Bright Abbott. I don't know.
Suffers verbal abuse from the people he audits as a government budget specialist.
Don't know. Next clue.
Is constantly reminded of his disastrous stint as mayor at the age of 18, which left his town bankrupt.
Oh, fuck. I feel like I know this, but I don't. Next clue, please.
Last clue. Suffered from food poisoning while eating his favorite meal, calzones.
I don't know.
Can I use a steel meal?
Yep, sure this can. Is your last one.
Ben Wyatt.
Ben Wyatt from Parks and Recreation is good for an additional point for Kate. Nicely done.
This wasn't any of the ones that they asked you to watch, I guess. But when you said Bright Abbott, I was like, oh, she's in the neighborhood.
Yeah. Fuck.
I was just wondering, like, is this one of the episodes, any of these the episodes that she was forced to watch?
No, yeah. I don't think they made her do Treat Yourself. That was the Batman one,
yeah.
No, I think they did, so, yeah. Sorry.
Sarah's getting old, forgetting things. All right, yep. Kate. His mother left him when he was a child. Nice, good, generic clue for you. Start you off.
Nope, a lot of these just sound like any anime, so no. Nice clue.
His father is in the army and uses that excuse not to be involved in his son's life.
I know a lot of characters like that. Again, next clue.
This character has to take care of his ailing grandmother by himself as a teen.
No, next clue.
Okay, final clue coming at you. His father died after stepping on the IED in Iraq.
Yeah, no, I don't know.
Right, I'm going to give you one more. You're out of points, but just one more hint is
they're going to kick you out of Austin for not knowing this one.
They're
going to
kick you out of Austin for not knowing what show this is from.
No.
Because it was from Friday Night Lights. And the character, anybody?
Oh, dear.
It's Matt Saracen.
Matt Saracen,
yep.
Womp womp. My husband was actually an extra in Friday Night Lights because he was in high school football when they were filming it. So,
neat. Oh, nice.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Are you ready, Jara?
Yes.
Had a flighty alcoholic mother who eventually abandoned her.
Veronica Mars.
Wow. Holy shit.
4 points.
Damn.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Yep.
Had his girlfriend and probable son's memories erased so they wouldn't remember him for their own safety.
His girlfriend and probable son's memory erased. Next clue, please.
Lost his mom at the age of 4 in a fire caused by a demon.
Fire caused by a demon. Is this Angel? Okay, did think
died
so.
Over and over for the amusement of a twisted celestial creature.
People getting everyone else's clues.
The huff of knowing.
The knowing huff. Yeah. Knowing huff, attorney at law. I'm going to be mad, but I need the next clue.
Was raised by his revenge-seeking dad to become a demon hunter.
That's the huff of not knowing. Oh my god, what the fuck is that character's name? It's like the title character. I don't know.
Sorry, all right, Bruce. Well, the points are done, but I implore you to remember who created this quiz and then go from there.
Caroline. It's one of the Sam or Dean.
A Winchester.
Yeah, Kate, do you know which one it is?
Dean Winchester.
Dean Winchester, correct.
I knew that at the girlfriend and probable son one.
Sometimes picky favors you, sometimes.
Picky is cruel.
Sometimes not. All right, Kate, but here's your actual question. Was arrested for protecting his property and family from foreign invaders.
What? Next.
Next clue coming at you. Was flogged, received 100 lashes for trying to escape.
Next one?
In a second attempt to escape, a guard was killed. Then he became a fugitive with a price on his head.
Man, where are my Winchester questions? Next.
Last clue. During one of his times in prison, he was raped by the commander who was obsessed with him.
No idea.
Tara knows this, I think.
Yeah, it's Jamie from Utlandar.
Utlandar, correct.
Oh, I still haven't watched that yet.
You're fine. I quit a while ago.
Tara.
Yep.
Even though she cheated on him, his ex-wife got 85% of his salary as well as his dignity into the divorce.
Keep going, please.
Was kicked in the nuts by a perp who turned him infertile.
Is this Charles Boyle?
That's good for three. I don't remember that, but there we go. Made me laugh.
Were there any clues about Lieutenant Peanut Butter?
No.
Oh.
That would be a good one, though. Yeah. All right, Sarah, this will take us into our score break. Good chance here on the four-pointer for you, I think. Found her mother dead on the couch.
Oh, Buffy Summers.
Buffy Summers is correct. All
was
right.
It's almost going to be Kate's canon presentation if it wasn't already in the canon. Yep.
All right, that is question 18, so it's time for a score break.
All right, I have 16. Sarah has 10. Kate has 9.
All right, close game. All right, Kate, that means you are in the Kate, you are in the Grossworth Equalizer Challenge Zone. In my hand, I am holding a Trivial Pursuit TV card question from the mid-90s. A long time ago. I'm going to read you all six questions. If you get half of them right, you're going to get an extra 2 points. If you sweep the card, you're going to get 4 points. Are you ready?
Yep.
First category is classics. What hair product's ad slogan was, "A little dab will do ya"?
God damn it.
Oh, I didn't know this either.
Nope.
I did.
No idea.
Brill cream. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Sarah's 70. All right, sitcoms.
I am.
Oh, God, these are all super old questions. Good luck, Kate. All right. Your next category is sitcoms. What's Otis usually in jail for on the Andy Griffith Show?
I don't know.
Name a small town crime. That's basically your answer.
Jaywalking.
Good guess. Drunkenness.
I was gonna say that, but then I was like, are they gonna put a drunkard in an Andy Griffith Show? I thought that was wholesome. Damn it, I should have just gone with being drunk.
He's ha-ha drunk. He's like Hulu Awards ha-ha drunk. Oh, what satirical soap thespians included Billy Crystal and Robert Guillaume. Oh, Robert
Benson.
Guillaume. Yeah, I know.
All of these things are way older than I am.
It's true, they are.
Okay, let me read that question again for you. What satirical soap thespians included Billy Crystal and Robert Guillaume? What satirical soap thespians included?
No idea.
I tried. Soap.
Soap, yeah. Oh my God.
Kids and games, so you need all three of these. What kids' show fixture was named for the size of his jacket pockets? Oh, okay. What kids' show feature was named for the size of his jacket pockets? Wouldn't have guessed this, but having seen the answer, it makes sense.
I don't know.
Okay, hey, sometimes you get a good card, sometimes you get a bad card. The stars were not aligned for you, Kate, on this one, obviously. No. The answer there, anybody?
No.
Captain Kangaroo. Nope.
Oh,
pockets. Kangaroo pockets. All right. Yeah. No worries. No points, but there's still plenty of game left, Kate. And you have your real question coming at you now. Your character, who's gone through some shit, he got arrested for walking around LaGuardia Airport naked.
Next.
Looted a television, quote, because the Jets lost.
Oh my God. Next.
Treated for mental health disorder by a quack doctor who characterizes his pathology as erratic tendencies and delusions brought by excessive notoriety.
I feel like I'm going to know it when she say it. Yeah, no. Next.
All right,
I
last
still
clue.
Don't know.
Was born to a prostitute named Licorice, spelt like lick with your tongue. After a failed abortion attempt, his father is believed to have been one of her clients.
Jeez. No idea. I'm gonna, no idea.
Selectively dark choices from Caroline on Tracy Jordan from 30 Rock.
Wow.
Oh my god. Okay. Damn. I don't remember stupid any now. Of those. Yeah.
Tara.
Yeah.
Was miserable during her marriage. Her husband had multiple affairs and ignored her.
Okay. Could be any number of people. Please keep going.
Her second husband had her lover arrested and on trumped up charges for revenge.
What was her name on revenge? Was her name Madeline? Okay.
Her drinking problem led to a car accident, causing her to go into labor prematurely.
No, I'm further away now. Keep going.
She suffered from postpartum depression after the birth of her son. Any guess? 1 point.
That's also lots of people. Juliet Barnes? No, it was a daughter.
Anybody know this one for Shits and Giggles? That was Sue Ellen from Dallas.
Oh, not Suzanne.
All right, Sarah, are you ready?
Yeah.
Felt overshadowed by her more popular older sister.
Jan Brady.
Yay!
Marsha.
Nicely
Marcia.
Done. 4 points. Back to Kate. Is the product of a love affair between a woman and a monk. Her mom died during childbirth.
No idea.
Next clue. Lost the Butter Queen pageant as a teenager due to a case of churn tampering.
No idea.
Third question. I mean, third hint. Her husband died of a heart attack in the middle of sex.
Oh, shit. No idea.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Last hint coming at you. Raised her hand when druids asked to sacrifice the dumbest virgin around to stop the nearby volcano from erupting. What?
No idea.
Sarah?
Rose Nyland?
From the Golden Girls. Please explain that last hint.
I can't.
Okay. Fair
but,
enough.
We will hear from either John or Adam on Twitter, I am sure.
All right, Tara, last question coming at you.
Okay.
Has a selfish, aggravating, ever-complaining mother. Brackets. Every sitcom.
Lorelai Gilmore. Okay.
Suffered from overeating for quite a while. Had to check herself into a treatment center.
It's not Monica Geller. Keep going.
Was seen naked in the shower by her live-in boss to his utter dismay.
Her live-in boss. My God. I don't know.
Had a horrendous haircut following a bet on leap day.
Claire Dunphy? I don't know.
No. Anybody know that one?
No.
No, that was Daphne Moon from Frasier.
Oh, right. Oh.
Tara, can I quickly get the scores?
Okay. Kate has 9. I still have 16. Still the same. Sarah has 14.
All right, Sarah, this is your last question. You could win, okay. You could tie, you could fall a little bit short. It's all up to you. Are you ready?
Nope. Let's
good
go.
Good luck.
I have
thank you.
A good feeling about this for you, Sarah. Here's your first clue. Was once attacked by a swarm of bees.
Is it Sarah? Just kidding.
Once attacked by a swarm
of bees. Of yes. Bees. That's worth 4 points if you can name this character from that clue.
I don't think it's this, but Ralph Wiggum.
Incorrect. Here is your second clue worth 3 points and still the victory. Gets splattered with the blood of fake innocent victims who collided with the trolley he was supposed to be steering.
Fake innocent victims? Yeah, I don't know. Next clue for all the right. Tie, I guess.
For the tie. This character saw the time knife.
The time knife?
Yeah, so let me read all your hints again. Was once attacked by a swarm of bees, get splattered with the blood of fake innocent victims who collided with the trolley he was supposed to steer, and he also saw the time knife.
Doctor Who?
Last clue. He ate Peeps chili during an existential crisis. Peeps chili.
Oh. Peeps chili. Walter Bishop?
Oh, I'm sorry, Sarah. I thought you were going to get that one.
He was also a prof, though.
Yeah, that's true. We were looking for Cheaty from The Good Cheaty. Place. The trolley experiment was the second clue. I thought you were going to get it on that one. All right, that is regulation. So, Tara Ariano, can I get the final scores, please?
Yes. Kate finished with 9. Sarah with 14. I had 16.
All right, Tara takes it. Before we get into the victory stuff, we have a tiebreaker. We're going to play it. Whoever wins gets a free steel mill for future use. Kate, you'll be playing for a future value guess. Here we go. Shout it out when you think you know it. Her adopted father was killed. Loses her powers after being wounded by a horrible monster. Kidnapped as a baby by an evil government organization. Anybody know it yet? Tara, Sarah, Kate. Any guesses? Last clue, still waiting for you. Seemingly sacrifices herself to save her friends from a horrible monster. Once again, her adopted father was killed. Loses her powers after being wounded by a horrible monster. Kidnapped as a baby by an evil government organization. And seemingly sacrifices herself to save her friends from a horrible monster. Any guesses? Very quiet.
I'm just going to say Paige from Charmed.
Incorrect. Everybody's still in it. I'm going to give you an additional clue from my brain.
Okay.
She...
Oh, no.
She has numerological nomenclature. There we go. 11.
I always want to call her 7, and I knew that wasn't right.
All right.
Good job.
Well done, Kate. You've earned future value guests a steel meal for future use. But today, Tara
well
takes
done,
it.
Everyone, except me.
Tara! Tara.
And that means, Tara, you also won this season.
History repeats itself. Try and you succeed. Yes! Hurrah!
Well done, Tara. Congratulations. Thank you, everybody, for playing. That was a fun game.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Well done, Tara.
Well, that's it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We gathered around the campfire to discuss the pilot episode of Killer Camp before going around the dial with stops at P-Valley, The Doghouse, Cursed, Junior Bake Off, Doom Patrol, and Harley Quinn. It seems like it was a given that Kate would get Givens A Winter Tale into the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's and this season's Game Time. Next up, it's the Tara-centric Weird TV Habits on Extra Extra Hot Great, and right here on the next EHG Prime Lost Resort. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
Jan Brady was going to be in there somewhere,
Sarah D. Bunting,
this is like the end of Platoon,
and Kate Sanchez.
Man, I just needed a Winchester question.
Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
All right, team, I want you to stay here and stew in your failure juice.